Hello, and welcome to the Space Cave. I'm David Huntsberger, a big warg to all of you spaceburgers out there. And this is episode number 98, which means we are closing in on 100, and more importantly, closing in on 104, 2 years of doing this show. When we get to 104, I think I will be in Scotland at the Fringe Festival. If you happen to find yourself in that part of the world, come on by the caves. I'll be at a venue there called Just Up the Stairs, performing every night at 5:25 p.m. with my show Big Nothingness. And it's me with some animation playing behind me. And if you'd like to commemorate 2 years of the show, there are once again 10, it's a limited edition print, special edition signed and numbered posters of the show. They're slightly different from last year. So if you're a collector, you can get this one. It'll be slightly different from the one you got last year. Anyway, those are up on thespacecave.com, ideally. It'd be absurd to mention this and not put them up, but I wouldn't put that past me. So check out those posters. If you also go to davidhuntsberger.com, I have a new book of comics that I recently published called Just Perfect, which are drawings I did over the years, little single panel cartoons, as well as some little scribblings and writings that are about a paragraph long. So it's an easy coffee table book if you want to have something laying around that's just fun. It's just silly and it's just fun. And let's get into the continuation of last week's episode. This is part two with Eric Kane, who is getting his PhD at UNC Charlotte in molecular and developmental evolution. I think we all know what that's all about. He's a fantastic fellow, and it's always nice chatting with him. We're having more of the 60-minute IPA from Dogfish Head. Here's part two with Eric Kane. Back with PhD candidate Eric Kane, who is studying at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, and he's sitting in a unisex bathroom currently and sharing some delicious Dogfish Head 60-minute IPA, which is the less hoppy of the IPAs that Dogfish Head brews. And I am a fan of that. I don't like them when they're insanely hoppy. And we're chatting about, I don't know why I suddenly feel like I'm a radio DJ. And we're just, if you're just joining us, we are chatting about, well, people would know you from not only your previous episode on this program, but also a couple appearances on Professor Blastoff. We've talked about viruses and then longevity, prolonging life. And then now it seems like we've zeroed in mostly on genes and kind of the building blocks of life and what the future projections of that might be.
yeah. I'm actually more of a Kurzweilian, Ray Kurzweil. I don't know if you know about him.
Oh, sure, the singularity. Yeah, where, I mean, he's got an astonishingly high rate of projecting the future correctly.
Yeah, because I like him because he's got evidence to back him up, right? He's made predictions and they've been right. So as a scientist, I just eat that up, right? No, I just feel like there are certain constraints on biology. I think we need to overcome biology before we'll ever be something like spacefaring or something that, you know, if we're looking at a future type thing, like a utopia or whatever.
So our genes and, you know, so to draw in Ray Kurzweil, like his idea of, and I've heard it recently start to be referred to as the connectome, meaning like the multi-trillions of synapses firing, the connections between our neurons that define our whole existence from the beginning to the end, if we could capture all those and log them, then we could potentially, via some sort of supercomputer, upload that consciousness, and it would be an exact replication of everything you've experienced. So then our genes might be irrelevant, and if that's the next step in evolution, and we place it into like a robotic device, a stronger one, can't be killed by wolves, at least not easily, then that's a step in the right direction. But for what? For us to, like you say, like go explore space a little bit more in depth?
Yeah, I'd say so. And listen, I'd be first in line for a bionic arm or something. I think that would be awesome.
But think of, you know, when you see someone like with a prosthetic leg, the place where it attaches to them, it'll chafe quite a bit. And,
I'm talking like super awesome, like almost conscious itself bionic leg. So by that time, I think the chafing will be dealt with, hopefully.
So you're laying in bed, you're sleeping fine, then your leg gets a wireless data update and has to get up and get to the kitchen, and it just drags you out of bed over there.
It plugs itself in, yeah.
Are you still psyched about this leg at that point?
Well, I don't know. Hopefully it would inject me with a sedative and I'd never even know it happened.
So when they're selling you the leg, they go, oh, and here's this feature. It'll do this on its own. This needle just comes up, stabs you in the pancreas, knocks you out, and you'd be like, yeah, hook it up. Sell that leg on there.
All the way up into the pancreas? That's like halfway up the body.
Oh, yeah.
Like, can you prick me like right in the
No, that's the beauty of this leg. Like, and I don't know where you're thinking that this leg goes all the way up to your hip, my friend. And why do you only want the one?
Actually, that's a good point. Maybe would I do half and half, like hip down, or would I do half and half, like one side of my body versus the other?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think if you're going to go robotic legs, you want your torso and upper body sitting on some kick-ass dueling robotic legs. I don't think you want to go half and half there.
Yeah, like one arm, one leg.
Yeah.
If I have a bionic leg, I want to fly, and I need two rocket boosters on the bottom to do that.
See, I'd think you'd want the boosters on the small of your back so you could kind of control your heft a little. You know, you could get...
Well, see, that's a bionic spine at that point, wouldn't it be? And so...
Yeah, no, you could wear it like as a backpack, just really cinch it on there. Like the Rocketeer. Right. And then you've got some yaw. You have some ability to control your yaw. You'd maybe put little swimming flippers on your robotic legs and head out.
No. Even better, just put propellers on them so you can go fast underwater.
But propellers are just so antiquated. I mean,
that's true.
You might as well have a steam engine on there. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be cool. It'd be loud. I mean, what would shoveling coal in that even look like? Would you...
You'd have a little satchel like Johnny Appleseed around you, and then you'd take a little spoon and shovel some coal in.
I'm imagining a tiny shovel.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
A snow shovel.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a bit smaller than like you would use in a fireplace, one of those shovels. It's just like a kid's playground shovel. You scoop out your coal. Yeah. Excuse me a moment. Then you shovel it in. Off you go.
Yeah, and you wear it like a rifle. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think you're into something there, but I don't know how effective that would be. You got your cool robot legs. You're racing all around town. People are impressed, especially with the steam flying off of you. But then where are you going? Well,
let's not forget I'm trying to burn coal underwater.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit much for you. But you figured it out. You know, somehow this coal operation is working down there.
Well, I just have to get bionic arms to do it for me, and then I'm set.
So you want to be you, but limit, like, is the physical operation of manipulating a human, meaning your own arms and legs, is that getting to be too much at this point? You've just had it?
Yeah, I'd be like, you know what, just pop my head off, put it on a full robot at that point.
But then the whole idea of you being you and having some sort of control is that you determine, oh, I'm gonna walk over there. Whereas this robot, it sounds like in your ideal world, would just be like, hey, we're heading to the refrigerator. And you'd be like, okay, I can eat. I guess you take me where you want me to go, man.
No, it would be a constant conversation. I'd be like, I don't know. Let's just sit down. And I'd be like, all right, fine.
Oh, okay.
Like a pitcher-catcher kind of thing. Like the catcher would suggest something and I'd wave it off.
I want to say that one of the most enjoyable parts of my body is that I don't have to ever argue with it in that capacity. Like, hey, what do you want to sit down? Yeah. Forget
Are
it.
Are you sure about that?
That's true.
Been sitting down and been like, you know,
I guess it's time to get up now. And your body's like, you can go to hell. I'm staying laying right here.
At least a robot would give you constructive feedback.
But I don't need it to talk me out of standing up. I trust that my brain knows we need to like get up and do stuff. My body already now is pretty persuasive. Like, come on, man, this bed feels delightful.
Yeah, but I feel like a robot would always want to get up over not. Like, it would be fine.
Oh, you've got yours wired up to be like really productive. But did you ever see that Simpsons episode where he got that dog Laddie and it was like too good of a dog? And he missed his old dog that was kind of crappy. I feel like that's how I'd feel with this robot that really wanted to get up and grab the world by the tail.
Except you're now part of that robot, so there's nothing you can do about it.
That's true. I can't like test drive it around for a while and then head back to my body.
Because your head's already popped off your real body.
Yeah, but I mean, are we going to get to a place where head transplants are kind of like at least presentable?
I think so.
Seems like, I mean, chimpanzee or no, it was an orangutan. And I say tang, I know it's tan. Who says that? Who says Neanderthal? It's ridiculous.
I know people who would yell at you so hard for saying that.
bring them at me. You bring your orangutans and your Neanderthal. It just sounds so ridiculous. It just doesn't roll off the tongue. Orangutan has a nice, cool flow to it. Neanderthal kind of slight. Yeah, it does rhyme. Orangutan. Ooh. What's going on over there? Oh, excuse me. It's orangutan. Ugh. It's like you stunted the ending. It's so terrible.
I agree.
Okay, so we're on the same page.
No, actually, there's been a surgery attempt, I think, in Russia of a human head transplant. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure that happened last year, last summer.
Ooh, I want to know more about that. Because I feel like what always happens, the times I've heard about it with, again, like primates, not humans, has been that the body's immune system develops like a nasty cold and basically infects the head off of the body, which is like a hilarious show of loyalty to the original head. Like, this isn't Kevin. Get off of me.
You know, you hear about organs like being rejected because of immune things. But I feel like that would be the worst experience, is waking up and your body is revolting against your own head.
Yeah.
That sounds a lot worse than like, oh no, my liver's being rejected.
Yeah, they need to put together like a pre-taped message.
My whole being
message.
Is being rejected.
They need a pre-taped message that they can store in your brain that is clearly going to be incapacitated. Almost like an outgoing message that when they sew it on there, the message is played and then it says, hi there, I'm a new head and I would love to stay here for a while. And this message is from your old head, Steve. He told me to assure you guys that I'm a nice person. And then you'd hear a recording be like, hey guys, it's me, Steve. This guy's telling the truth. Listen, I was hit by a bus.
This guy's legit.
This guy's legit. His body was crushed by an elevator and he needs this body. And as you know, we had that unfortunate incident with the bus and I no longer have my head. Anyway, hope you guys can get along. I miss you, Steve. And then if they put that on and while the patient was like recovering, then the body would go, all right, we were going to summon a cold, but let's give this guy a chance. Steve said he's okay. That would give it the best fighting chance.
That would be great. I would love if that was reality.
Yeah, and what if we could float around? All right, man, let's get back into genetics. Let's figure out, like, because, I mean, we left off last time with you essentially saying, like, hey, man, I'm a scientist. I don't think about harebrained things. I don't want to waste my time wondering why. I just want to look at the stuff that's there. First of all, let me ask you, I'm trying to get as many of these people on record as possible. You'll soon have a PhD. What climate change, real or a hoax?
100%. Real.
All right.
And how dare you even ask?
I know, but I'm like you. I'm a scientist in this regard, where I'm just collecting data. I've had zero people who are highly educated even hesitate to answer. Oh yeah, it's something we should pay attention to. So if nothing else, for my peace of mind, and if I have a conversation with someone, and they say, well, you know, a lot of scientists, I'll go, oh, do they? Listen to this, and I'll just play a smash cut of all of the people answering that question, and say, so there's my research that I've done personally. I think it's absurd where we are currently, but I just want to make sure there's not some outlier out there who's like, oh, I've dedicated a dozen years of my life to higher education, and also the Earth is 6,000 years old.
I know somebody who got a master's in bioinformatics who doesn't believe it's real, so you can add that to your... Yeah.
Okay. So you're a scientist. You're trying to objectively just study genes, and it's got to be comforting in some way that you can just zero in on that thing. It's not that it's like putting blinders on, but it does narrow your focus rather than seeing all of the shit that's going on in the world and being kind of paralyzed by how much of it there is. You can zoom in to essentially one of the smallest things there is, and just get lost in that. Is that some of the appeal to it?
I don't think that exactly is the appeal, but I mean, that's part of it. I think part of the thing is that when you zoom in that far, there's still a crap load of stuff that you have to figure out. And so I don't know. I kind of like a lot of things. I'm interested in a lot of things. I'm kind of a generalist. So I guess it's hard to answer that question. There's a lot of stuff going on, but I'm constantly happy by it. I don't know if I'm ever paralyzed by it.
Yeah.
With the why stuff, I just kind of see it and I go, well, I can't really make an argument with true facts behind it, so I guess I'll just ignore it for now while I'm a scientist. When I'm a person, I'll talk to you. Like, if I'm just like having a beer with you, like now, I guess we're talking about it, right? I don't mind that.
Oh, you don't mind it? Well, that's comforting. That you. Yeah, I mean, I guess when you're out with your friends and you take off your scientist lab coats and you, hey, want to meet over there? And then, you know, I can't imagine that every single conversation is about research and discovery. There's got to be, at least at some degree, someone might posit something that causes you to think for a moment, even if it's not like the general, is there a God? But if it's something more specific to that, like, do those thoughts get into your head from time to time?
Yeah. Are we in a simulation? Gets into my head a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Multiverse stuff gets into my head a lot. Like, are we just a bubble floating around, right?
Yeah.
What something from nothing really means, right? Because physicists will say, you know, something does come from nothing. I'm just like, I don't really understand what that means. So I think about that a lot. I think a lot about a lot of social justice things a lot, too. And I just don't, because a lot of that stuff, there's a lot of gray area. And so I've spent a lot of time thinking about where I... you know, fall into that sort of thing. And that has a lot to do with, you know, your identity and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
How I form my value system.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best things currently happening is people being forced, not forced, but asked in a very effective way. Like, why do you think the things you think? Is it because someone put them in your head? Have you really stepped back and objectively looked at the world, seen it through as many different eyes as possible, and then concluded that your views are not necessarily sound, but at least like defensible or reasonable.
And like sometimes you'll just be like, well, I can't really think of any reason behind this, but you know what? I identify with it anyway. So that's just where it's going to have to be.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole discussion to be had there about people and why they hold on to their beliefs the way they do. And I guess focusing more so on you, though, where, you know, you, having these questions about, you know, like the multiverse or a simulation or, you know, when you look at all the factors involved in being on planet Earth in its current state and having an idea of where it came from and assuming that every history book ever created wasn't lying to you, that we have evolved from potentially, like, you know, being in caves and then having swords and knights and kings and queens and crusades and then the old west and campfires and mining and, you know, wagon trains and then on and on and on. So it's not going to stay like this forever. It never stayed like any of those things. It's either it's a simulation and they got bored with that world, or more likely, it's this thing that we're all aware. Well, I guess if you're devoutly religious, you're not aware of it. It potentially came from nothing, and it is in the middle of still growing and expanding. And yet, within that, this thing has been spinning around this glowing thing for billions of years, keeping a relatively tight pattern in spite of overwhelming evidence that there should just be pure chaos. And it's developed the perfect atmosphere to house us, and us actually happened and crawled out of the ocean and evolved into all these other beings. And now we are here having this discussion through technology from thousands of miles between us. And you would wonder why. Why start that? Why have a guess where it's going? Why be a part of that? What it would seem like why would be just inherently kind of mixed into that. Like, if there's zero why to it, that and it, that's a kind of a concrete answer to the why, but it still starts with, yeah, but why?
Yeah, but like when you actually think about it, like what is your definitive answer for why? Do you have one?
No, that's what I love. And no, okay. So that, yeah, I guess that's what I was kind of asking is like, I like when, you know, a lot of times you ask scientists and they go, oh, I don't know. Like I don't spend too much time thinking about it because it seems unanswerable and a waste of time. Whereas I totally get that, but I also feel like, but you've got the most evidence. Like you've got the best chance of having like a reasonable guess as to what this might be and why it might be.
Yeah. But I don't know. Do we? I feel like that's up to the philosophers and the theologians more. I don't know.
Yeah. I can see both sides of that. Aren't they kind of
like
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. Because like when the detectives show up at a murder case, they don't think about why did this happen? Right. They look up the evidence and see how they think it happened. And then it's up to somebody else to figure out why, right?
That's a good example. As you know, your forensics person would just be so obsessed with the blood splatter and even just the DNA that was on, you know, bits of articles of clothing, and that would really be their role in it. But in my mind, I feel like the forensics people go out for drinks as well and say, you know, if I were guessing, I think this person hit this person on the head this way, the blood spilled this way, they stepped in it with this boot when they turned, but they, I guess they don't. You're right, that is the detectives being like, not only did he do that, we gotta race over to this house over here because more than likely that person is headed there next. And then, you know, in your crime drama shows, they get there just in the nick of time and they save that person. So maybe that's why the why seems important. Like, okay, we're in the middle of this crime drama right now. And you are the forensics person. Where are they going to strike next? What's going to happen?
But that's still how, because you're using the patterns for how to predict where they'll go next. Mm-hmm. The why is the motive part. That's up to the lawyers.
Okay, good point. But they operate on a motive that maybe you could only know if you open up the perpetrator's head.
Right.
You know, but you can operate going like, well, they hammered their old boss to death and the boot tracks to their car, the peel out, looked like it was headed in the direction of that person's, you know, whoever, supervisor or something like that. That seems like a likely person that had wronged them. They also... Oh, we're just getting reports now that at a meeting they had, both of those people very publicly chastised this person, our alleged attacker. So you have enough fake why there. Yeah. You have like a built-in, like, I think this is why.
I don't know if this analogy is actually that good. So I just had a thought. It's kind of like, that would be like the detective stopping and being like, but why do boots exist?
But why doesn't that happen more on those shows? I think that's the best. Just like racing across town in a car. We've only got 15 minutes. Hey, wait a second. Why do boots exist? Yeah, you're right. That is, I mean, is that part of the fun? I mean, I always think of that like in the monkey cage kind of thing. Like if I were designing something, I would definitely just give all kinds of false leads and just no solvable way. And really, if I were watching from above, my main goal would be like, stop worrying about it. Just have fun. That's all you're supposed to do is just enjoy it.
Right. So you'd say you'd like lay down the fossil record, like how it is now, to trick us into thinking evolution's real and be like, hee hee, got you.
No, I think it would even start before that. I would keep the dinosaurs even confused. And like, so if humans all die out and the next things that show up, see all these skyscrapers and stuff, and they go, what in the hell is all this? And then they have to start digging and finding fossils. And then they find pipelines underground and under the oceans and just be like, what was this? It would just be so baffling. And that's giving them the same benefit of brain power as we currently have. So maybe they will be dinosaur-like, and we can only presume that they weren't as sophisticated. Yeah. And so maybe they will be beyond us. You know, if you were, say, you know, looking at this like a playground, you would, you know, maybe you sprinkle on some dinosaurs and watch them play for a bit, and then that gets old and you meteor them out. And then it's reasonable that humans would also get pretty boring after a while. But I don't know if this is like the pinnacle right now, or the bitter end, or just the beginning.
Right. But I don't know. So, like, you know, we're talking about, like, what you would do if you invented humans, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, whatever, if we were invented by some weird, who knows what, right? Or we're in a simulation. The thing that created that simulation or created all the patterns that exist in the universe would be so intelligent that we would not be able to even comprehend their thought processes. The same way a chimp is not going to be like, oh, I totally get quantum physics. Yeah, totally. Right?
Yeah.
Completely. No way. And so that's why I'm kind of like, well, I don't know if I can think of it in that way, because whatever they're thinking, I wouldn't even be able to approach, most likely.
That's funny. There's a sketch that I've been thinking of for this very show that may appear soon that has to do with that exact premise. And now maybe it came out. I mean, this could come out months from now, and that sketch would have already aired. Oh, man, this nonlinear time we live in. Then people hearing this would be like, oh, crazy. I remember that sketch. That was a while ago. But yeah, I do think that like, we see, I think about this from, to kind of tie in genetics to a certain degree, that we are, we're potentially the first strain or the first step in evolution that will fundamentally and wholeheartedly understand that we are not as smart as the next step. You know, like chimps, like you just said, like they can't go, oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't figure out to put the triangle block in the triangle hole. I'm just a chimp. Whereas like whoever is the next step in evolution, if they're, you know, whether they're solving math problems in their minds or levitating things or whatever we think of when we think, and again, how stunted our brains are, like, what would smart people look like?
Right.
We can't even really fathom. But if they came to us and said, like, I'm sorry, but you've got to go in that cage, and you and I would probably be like, that's reasonable. We're part of the old gang, and we're impulsive and violent, and yeah, we're the worst. Good luck, you new gang. You guys are so smart. And that would feel really weird, because I think we'd want to take up arms and be like, you new evolution humans, you sons of bitches, think you're better than us.
Well, yeah. I don't know, though, is because I think you're imagining evolution kind of as a mountain that's always, you know, you're always hiking up a mountain, and the farther you get up, the better you are, right? Uh-huh. For all we know, the human race could evolve back toward some, you know, we could stay equally as intelligent for the next billion years or whatever, who knows, until we're wiped out off the planet.
Yeah.
So I guess if you're talking about like non-biological evolution, so like a step toward super intelligence mediated by technology, which isn't truly evolution, right?
Yeah.
Then I would probably step up against my machine overlords, but then again, maybe not. If they offer utopia, I'll take it.
But
like,
what
if you ever envied your dog before? It wouldn't be that bad, but like, dogs have it pretty good.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you've seen someone just be endlessly happy and psyched, and you know the way a dog is, we're like, man, every day when I come home, so excited, never a dip off in excitement, always the same level of like, this is the best. Yeah, who wouldn't want that?
Yeah.
And, you know, when you...
Would you give up your freedom for that? That's the question, right?
I like to think that you know, when they came up with that idea that dinosaurs evolved into chickens, that feels very similar to
all
me.
All birds, actually. All birds are dinosaur. Yeah, they share ancestors with dinosaurs.
Yeah, it makes some sense where they're like, you know, at a gathering and be like, all right, gang, listen, we were tiny and we evolved and we kept pushing the envelope and we pushed it. And now look at us. We weigh several tons. It's hard to find enough food to stay full. Am I right? I mean, let's be honest here. I'm just basically trying to chase food every waking moment of my life. What if we could just peck a little bit off the ground here and there and be full and never have a thought in our heads, be so dumb, and death would just be a part of it? Who's with me? And maybe we could evolve to a point where we'd be like, let's do it. Let's go back to being chimps. Chimps seem fun.
Yeah, but do you know how fun it would be to live like... back when dinosaurs were on the earth, everything would be big and dramatic, and there was so much oxygen in the atmosphere. Every breath you take would just invigorate you, and you could just, sure, you're big, but your prey is huge too, right? And there's weird vegetation all around. I don't know. I think I'd be a T-Rex with my little vestigial arms.
I'm glad there weren't mirrors then. Because I'll bet if you have consciousness and you're running around as a velociraptor and you're like, look at me, I'm one of the fast ones and I'm zooming around. I'm kind of like a T-Rex, but I'm a little more nimble. And then you look in a mirror and you're like, oh, God, I'm horrifying. I just look like walking, menacing anger. This isn't great.
Yeah, but that makes me think what the first human did when they looked in a mirror. And who invented mirrors anyway? Like,
a monster.
He killed himself immediately.
Well, I guess they had seen like their reflection off of ponds and stuff and be like, that can't be it. That can't be it.
Yeah, that's true. Because that's one sign of like when a baby becomes truly self-aware is, can it recognize itself in the mirror?
Yeah, I mean, do you give any notion or any, you know, our consciousness? I mean, I would assume as a person, you know, examining genes all the time and DNA and having a very solid understanding of every element, amino acids and proteins and et cetera, that comprise what it is to be human, you probably fall in the camp of, well, yeah, that's what makes you. Just those synapses firing start to create your consciousness. But do you give any thought to the idea of a soul or, you know, reincarnation and the multi-life kind of theories?
I don't believe in a soul, but reincarnation is interesting. I think about it because of probability. If our universe is truly infinite, would a collection of atoms come together exactly like me somewhere else on the opposite end of the universe? I think about that, but I'm like, I don't know if that's... There's got to be an answer to that question somewhere.
Yeah, because I would
think... Some physicists probably figured that out.
Because then in the combination... You know, it's easy, like going back to the connectome, the idea that we could map out every exchange our brain has had with itself, every single firing of a synapse, and be like, yep, that's a connectome. Let's put it in a computer and you will just be in that computer. I think the step prior to that, that to me is more emblematic or representative of you, is every single unspooling of all those boxes of DNA, all the genes that went into having the Hox. Is that correct?
Yeah, the Hox gene, yeah.
Hox gene, like exploring and determining the parameters of the size of your brain and where each and every neuron would go, all the cells, the way they're placed. That, to me, seems almost more determining of who you are as opposed to just, like, the thoughts that those neurons have.
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, that's, yeah. But, you know, I'm not consciously aware of my Hox gene.
Oh, I am now more than ever.
I don't know, because you can build a brain that is off, right? And you're not you anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's got to be all the firings that give us our consciousness.
Yeah, I know that they say the firings or the arrangement of our neurons are on an order of several trillion or whatever. You know, it's like grains of sand or stars in the sky, levels of like uniqueness. And I still think
it's the most complex thing in the universe. Yeah, yeah.
But what's the order then of, you know, the four letters of DNA unspooling millions and millions of times to create all the genes that make you? That's got to be up on a pretty high order as well, right?
Oh, that's a good question. So let's see. Yeah, I think it's about the same, actually. Actually, it's probably bigger because they come together in triplets to code for an amino acid. So I actually know this, but I can't remember it off the top of my head, because there's a certain amount of amino acids that can all connect with each other in all different ways. It's some astronomical number, yeah.
So you're specifically unique in that way, and yet twins, I mean, are just the strangest example right there in front of our faces at all times. Like, you think you're so insanely unique with all of those things, with all the neurons, and clearly twins don't have the same thoughts all the time at the same time, but they're about as close as we can get to kind of eliminating that idea of you're extraordinarily unique.
Yeah. But, you know, I have twins in my family, and, you know, they're different people. And, you know, the cool thing about twins is all the environmental things that can lead to differences, so epigenetics.
Mm-hmm.
No, all the twins I know, they're not the same person. They're all different. Maturity level, things they prioritize. So I think that's actually kind of a testament to how cool and unique human brains can be. It's that even if you're an identical twin, you can develop into a completely different person than your twin.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, like, for you not believing in a soul and probably thinking of like the materialist side of, well, I got to have consciousness and exist in this plane for a little while. And there's a high probability that when I cease to have a pulse and or any brain activity, it will just be darkness. There will cease to be any more me. And yet it feels like, are we closing off that level of hope by thinking that? Are we closing off the idea of, but what if in spite of the odds of on the order of several trillion that I've navigated my way in through there and I'm just a part of that. And there is this element of consciousness that reverts back to either being part of the universe or just part of this kind of ethereal something.
Well, you know, you said it yourself, most likely, right? High probability.
Yeah.
And I'm that kind of agnostic actually, but and in that case, you know, you were also a part of, you know, in this line of thinking, you were also a part of the universe before you were born, but you don't remember anything before you were born, right? Mm-hmm. So I would imagine in this spirituality, right, that before you're born, you're also a part of this ethereal universal consciousness, right? But I don't remember anything before I was born. So I'm just like, oh, that's a drag.
Yeah, I would want to, if nothing else, like, you know, people, when they have dreams and they tell you about them, the most common response is just to be like, okay. And it feels like best case scenario when this life is over, that's all you're asking for is maybe just someone to be there and go, oh man, it was crazy. Like I was on it was a round planet and we all had like two legs, none of them robotic. Yeah. And we could like pour things into those bodies. We could eat things and you had to eat things. And so the person listening would be like, yeah, who cares? Shut up. Let's go do something else.
Or, you know, I always think about it like you die and then all of a sudden you wake up and they're like, congratulations, that was your hazing. Welcome to this awesome society.
Yeah.
Your humanness, that was what you used to be. Now welcome to being better. Did you have fun in your rite of passage? I'd be like, holy crap.
That is a good trick. I was hoping this was what this was all about. And then I suppose there are parallels people would draw there for like heaven and such. Like, oh, if you went through the whole procedure on Earth and didn't manage to lose your mind and become a maniac, like then you get to be a part of that cool society. Whereas that would be maybe like the ultimate trick is that, you know, you wake up out of it and you've gotten away with being a murderer for ages or something like that. And then the people there, you wake up and they go, dude, we watched all of that. What was that all about? You go, oh.
You have to go back under. Sorry. No!
You're going back in, and this time you're some kid's hamster. Oh, God. Karma, things like that. Like, you know, as you're just in, you know, again, like you having a glimpse into the factory where it's made. And I feel like that's what it is. You have this, you know, microscope and other examining mechanisms. Right. Yeah, yeah. Like you could see and go like, all right, I can't see the little workers putting on their hard hats. But like, I kind of do see, you know, the factory floor of here's how they're made. Look at this. I can guarantee you if I alter this gene, this bird's going to come out with whatever, different feet, different wings. I can alter this gene and this mouse is going to have a problem with this ear. Things that specific. I would imagine it gets hard to romanticize the idea of like, oh, there's just karma and there's energy in the world and you got to put it out there and it'll come back to you. Do you give any thought to things like that?
No. Although I do think of karma kind of just as the ultimate embodiment of the golden rule, right? Uh-huh. If you exist in a society, of course, the more good things you do for people, you're going to improve your life simply because it's going to come back to you because you live in a society full of connections between people. And if you maximize your positive connections with people, it's going to come back for you eventually because you're interacting with these people all the time, right?
Yeah.
But I think of karma in that very realistic sense, right?
Yeah. So it is a non-zero thing for you. Like, or maybe it's a zero-sum game. Like, well, if I'm putting in something, this person's going to put something back. So then that can feel kind of callous, right? You could talk yourself into like, oh, in some weird way, I'm only good because I know this person will then be good back to me. Sweet.
Or no, just put as much positive stuff into society because, you know, unless you get unlucky, generally society will respond positively because that's how society should work, right? Yeah. Otherwise, we fall apart.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, all right. So
I don't know if that's callous. I think it's kind of poetic about how social things work. You know?
I think so. Yeah, I just think that, like, whatever it takes to get people being nice to each other, you would think that the ends kind of justify the means there. And so to look at a place like North Carolina and be like, all these assholes who are in favor of the stupid bathroom bill are going to a building every Sunday and singing along and nodding their heads and looking over their shoulders with this self-righteous nodding, kind of like, we're the best ones. We're doing it right. And denying people basic civil liberties. Just so maddening.
Yeah.
So frustrating on that level to be like, well, whatever it takes, you're getting it wrong. You're doing it wrong. You're absorbing it wrong. Whatever it is, you're the assholes.
Yeah, but you know, look what's happening to these segments of society, right? You know, I guess evangelicals still have a ridiculous amount of power in the election system.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to go away soon. And it'll just be interesting to see, you know, what happens after they're out of power.
Yeah, because
all the negative stuff out, you know.
But haven't people been thinking that for a long time? I mean, they do keep reproducing, and they do keep shoving those thoughts into kids' heads. Luckily, so many of those kids shake free of that stuff and go, oh, God. Oh, man, I saw this movie. It totally changed the beauty of, like, truth. And was it Winston Churchill who said, facts are stubborn things? And that's a great thing. Isn't that the best? Like, that's such the perfect science thing of, like, hey, kid, you can let your parents talk you into this for a dozen years, maybe two dozen, but these unrelenting facts will be over here throughout, just waiting there patiently. And so luckily, a number of children telling themselves every day, I'm bad, I'm going to hell, I'm bad, I'm going to hell, I'm bad. And then something happens where they go, oh, you know what? Fuck all of this. And it just changes them, and they are no longer one of that group. So is that what makes you feel like they are going to decline in numbers?
Yeah, they'll decline in power for sure. And then we'll see what society does. You know, they've been putting so much negative energy out. We'll see what, you know, some things, you know, we'll see.
All right. Well, I like your optimism there, because it comes from a place of reasoning and scientific objective thinking to some degree. Maybe there's a tinge of hopefulness in there too, right?
Yeah. I am worried though. Yeah, Republicans do have an electoral advantage, geographic advantage. So I'm just like, young people need to move back out of cities, back into districts, in the bumpkin.
Well, I think in 2020, isn't gerrymandering supposed to be up for redistribution or something like that?
Yeah, well, yeah. So there's actually a special election happening in North Carolina this year. I think it may have gotten pushed back because the gerrymandering report came back, and North Carolina is actually ranked just above Iran in terms of freedom index. So that's how terribly our state's cut apart. So there's a special election going on.
Oh boy. Well, I hope you can get out there and vote in it.
Yeah, I will definitely. Sure.
That away. Well, Eric, this has been delightful, and I think we did make good on our promise and solve the riddle, the mystery of the universe, figured out life in pretty short order as well. Well, I'm glad you're
powered robots. That's the answer.
I'm glad you're out there on the ground floor doing the good work. And when will you be done with your PhD?
We'll see. In the summer, possibly, actually. Like in August.
Oh, cool. Well, you have to come back. Maybe if I make a trip that way, or if you get out to the West Coast, drop by and pay a visit as the actual Dr. Kane, which is a cool doctor name.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know it is, isn't it? Yeah. I don't know. Doctor, ugh.
That's great. You've earned it, man. You've been, I feel like we've been able to, through Professor Blastoff and now this, kind of chart your progress a little bit. It seems like you're still enthusiastic, still going after it with the same level of passion. That's great.
Yeah. I can express the passion still pretty well, at least. Yeah.
Well, thanks for the good beer recommendation. I enjoyed it. And thanks as always for chatting. This was enlightening.
Well, I'm glad I could be of service. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. Talk to you soon.
Yep, see ya.
See you, dude.
See ya.
Got a little bit more philosophical that time. which I like. I like the beer episodes, and especially part two of the beer episodes kind of loosens people up a little bit from time to time. Who knows? But that seems to be where the conversations generally wander. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope to chat with Eric again down the road at some point. He's a fascinating fellow, and it'll be exciting to see where his career takes him once he officially has his PhD and is Dr. Eric Kane, which we've seen a few people on this show go on to do, cross that threshold and become doctors. And so far, none of them have come back and been extraordinarily pretentious and or a changed, different person. But, you know, you're entitled to. You get that PhD, you can waggle that around right in people's faces for all I care. Like I mentioned, I'll be at the Fringe. If you live in Los Angeles, I'll be running the show July 26th at Sal's on Melrose. So if you'd like to come see a free preview of the show, it'll be me and the animation there at 8 p.m. And yeah, thanks to Dan for putting this show together. Thanks to all of you who subscribe and rate the show, share it, talk with your friends about it. Follow the show on Twitter, space_cave. You can suggest beer or music or guests or any number of things. And if you really want to support the show, there's a Patreon page, and that's where I post some of the bonus content, additional segments of the interviews, little songs, little behind-the-scenes looks into what I'm doing in my career and or life. So if any of that interests you and you want to support the show on a monthly basis, Patreon is the way to do that. And thanks to all of you who do support the show. As I mentioned, the 2-year anniversary coming up, I'll be sending some of the Patreon people a little special gift. So look for that in the mail. And if your mailing list or mailing address has changed, please update that, because I'm sending a gift your way. All right, let's get out of here. Enjoy your week. I hope you had a wonderful Game of Thrones premiere and whatever else you happen to be doing on the weekend. I'm fond of all of you. Thanks for listening to the show. Here's a song by The Meeting Places called On Our Own. Thanks for stopping by the Space Cave.